I've always been this. An exhibit instead of a person.
You are a person to me. You can be a person with me. No more even days and odd days.
We shall just have days. Can I ask what brought this on?
I picked my own orange. George, I know you do not owe me anything after how I have behaved, and I know you do not like social events, but I need us to do something.
What do you need?
Our palace walls are too high.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Bridgerton with Mary and Blake. It's a podcast dedicated to Bridgerton on Netflix, so sit back and relax, and let's get ready to spill the tea. Hello, everybody. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake. Actually, just Blake. Sorry. I messed that up. And the reason why I messed it up is because I am all kinds of messed up from this episode.
Holy smokes. Was a doozy for so many of us, but particularly Blake. So for those of you who are new to Blake and I, Blake is the super duper emotional one of us.
Oh.
If there's going to be crying, it's going to be me. Usually from Blake.
Which is wild. Because normally I'm not like that, but for some reason with television...
Oh, I'm like, yes, you are. Yeah,
yeah, with TV, you are. Television and film, I am a blubbering mess. Like, I'm not like a super crier.
In real life. Like when things happen with me, crying.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely not true.
I'm kidding.
Oh, man, that's brutal right there, Mary.
No, you are the emotional one of us.
I would agree.
For 100% sure. If you also shed some tears in this episode, know that you are not alone. And speaking of not being alone, we want to make sure that you keep these podcast episodes being shared with others. So one of the things that you can do is you can actually head to our Apple Podcasts. Even if you don't listen on Apple Podcast, that is actually one of the best ways for people to learn about our podcast. You want to write a written review, not just leaving the stars, but leaving a sentence or two would go a long way. You can also share this in your stories and on social media, or just tell another friend who you know is really enjoying Queen Charlotte. And we want to thank our friends at jointhenerdclan.com. who've also made this possible. We're pretty much like PBS, listener supported. And so if this does bring you some joy, head on over to jointhenerdclan.com. There's lots of perks and benefits, including early access to all of our shows if you head on over there. And it helps keep our podcast lights on and helps with all of our hosting fees. So thank you so incredibly much. MaryandBlake.com is also a place for you to check out to see all of our other awesome podcasts and blogs. All right. And for you not to feel alone, we do have a Facebook community. You just search Mary and Blake on social media. You'll find us on Instagram and YouTube and Facebook, but we also have a group. So we would love for you to hang on out there so you can geek out about if you cried or not in this episode. All right. On that note, let's get into the show.
I did it again. This is the third time.
You need to move the sound effect so it's up higher. Play this, Blake. It'll be labeled. I
know. Here we go.
Right. So this is the part where we get to talk a little bit about the music aspect. And for friends who are watching this on video, we apologize. Blake has been finagling with our cameras for an hour and a half before podcasting and still didn't get it right, Blake. It's okay.
There we go. Got it now.
So the music in this episode I wanted to especially highlight. So we did not get a classical version cover of a traditional pop song.
Yeah, we did.
In the last one.
I wanted to say in the last episode.
So it was really nice to have that back again. It's something that I commented about how during the wedding dance of Charlotte and George, I missed that we had something like that. That was in the episode one. And then we got Halo in the carriage ride, but episode two was completely void of a cover like this. So it really stood out in this episode when we got it. And of course we got Alicia Keys, If I Ain't Got You.
Mm-hmm. I'm bringing it up right now, by
good.
The way.
So the vitamin C version?
Yes, just good. give me a sec.
So what is really neat, once again, I wanted to reiterate, I said this in our first episode, is that the cover pieces for Queen Charlotte are all done by women of color, by black women. And I think that is super cool. We're going to have multiple Beyonce covers. But this one, Alicia Keys, the words, of course, they're pretty self-explanatory about how, you know, you can give me all the riches in the world. Some people want it all. I don't want anything at all if it ain't you. Mm. And so I think it's really poignant because here's, you know, King George saying, yes, I'm the king, but like, this is all I've known all my life. And, you know, I'm pretty much like put on show for people. I have this really heavy, crazy job, but I have all the wealth in the world. I'm literally the king of England. Mm. But with you, Charlotte, I think I can accomplish great things. And then she kind of feels the same way. Like, she has all the things in the castle. She gets to have all the dresses and all the parties and all the people and things that she can now do now that she's out of her honeymoon. But what she spends her attention on isn't watching Little Mozart, isn't chatting with her friends, isn't, you know, picking out new dresses. It is looking at George as he's farming, and that's what matters to her. So I wanted to share with you, in addition to, are you playing the song?
No, but I will right now.
Playing it. This, of course, is another cover by the Vitamin C Quartet. They're usually who plays the pieces inside the Bridgerton universe. But couple of fun facts about this. So this is by Alicia Keys. This is a 20-year-old song. So yes, you may feel old. Like,
no,
I
you
now
are
do.
Old. That's it. That you are old.
This piece was written, though, by Alicia Keys when she found out that the 20-year-old R&B singer Aaliyah had died in a plane crash in the Bahamas in 2001.
Man, I remember that. Holy smokes.
So bringing you on back, wicked far along, you know, ago, Keys was like on a plane when she heard of this, mm-hmm. which, like, how scary is that?
Right.
Like, you're on a plane and then you find out about another singer who dies in a plane crash. And she was thinking about, like, how you need to be present in this moment and how nothing else matters but those that love you. And it was a really strong feeling that was present in her life at the time. And this, of course, just like blatantly put in her face, like, holy smokes, nothing in this world, no thing, no money, like, none of this matters unless mm-hmm. you're actually here in this world. And I loved that because, you know, as we go forward, George is physically in this world mm-hmm. for Queen Charlotte, but he's not necessarily always mentally there, and how difficult that is, which with what Brimsley even says, like, it would have been easier in some ways had George died and Charlotte could have moved on in one way or another, maybe remarried, found another love, or at least like moved on. And yet he's here some of the time and then he's not here some of the time, and how difficult that must be. And that's why I think we see Charlotte kind of have a cold heart in many aspects as she grows up. But the other thing that I wanted to point out to you is that not only do we have this version, but if you can click that next one.
Oh, you want to go to the next one?
Netflix actually did something really, really cool. They brought Alicia Keys back, and there is a music video of If I Ain't Got You with an orchestra of 74 women of color. And
wild.
This came out on May 3rd. It is led by South Africa's first black female conductor. So everyone, all musicians, conductors, Alicia Keys, like everybody, 74 black women.
I gotta tell you, the video is cool, man.
They dress all the women up. They do a whole like makeup. They dress them up in Bridgerton like gowns. And if you read some of the interviews by these musicians, they say that this is the first time in their life this has ever happened. You know, if they're lucky, there may be like three other people of color in an orchestra with them, because these are all classically trained instrumentalists, of course. And they said for them to sit down and not be so starkly a minority, mm-hmm. but to also see women, a lot of orchestras are pretty heavy in men.
Sure.
So, but for that, this was like the first time this has happened for them, and to be such a great number of these high level, like top notch musicians mm-hmm. playing this song in this season that is really making such a strong statement about equality. And for them to play this along with Alicia. If you haven't seen this music video, I highly recommend that you do. I think that it was really, really cool that they decided to do this, not only to cover Alicia Keys' song, but then to do this full orchestra, women of color, and make it in the Bridgerton verse, you know, with the outfits. It's a really, really neat thing.
By the way, I just want to say this. Alicia Keys?
Yeah.
I think she's Benjamin Button.
I think she's been sitting in formaldehyde for 20 years.
Not one second of aging.
No.
Not one second.
No.
Like,
move over Brad Pitt. I mean,
like, seriously. Alicia Keys.
Well done.
Stunning.
Well done.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
You know, it is. It's funny when you talk about age when it comes to, like, Hollywood and people in music. Yeah. Like, I just learned that Adele and Taylor Swift are the same age.
That's wild. I can't even. I always thought that Adele was way older than Taylor Swift.
Not, and in that movie Love Actually, Keira Knightley is only 5 years older than the little kid who learns the drums.
Oh,
five.
Get
just
out of
five
here.
Years
That's
older.
Enough. That's enough out of all of you.
So needless to say, if you sit here and you're like, how does Alicia Keys look that good? It is the magic water mojo juice slash.
They I don't have, know.
They, you know, if and everything is nothing if I ain't got you, she's singing that maybe things to skincare that she can afford that none of us can. But Alicia Keys, seriously, this woman looks phenomenal.
Yeah,
all kidding aside.
She is stunning.
Well done.
And
well done.
The video here is just spectacular. If you do get a chance, go on YouTube, check it out. It's really it's definitely a work of art, and I'm so glad that that Netflix
took the extra level. Yeah, they really said, like, you know what? Let's go big with this. And I think it's a really cool thing. So definitely check it out, friends. Because I didn't know about it until I was researching it for this episode.
I got to tell you, Marvin, I think that this might be my favorite cover in all of the
Now that you've
verse.
Seen this?
No. Oh. I mean, but like, yes, that this certainly
this
helps.
Elevate it,
like you said. But no, I just think, even before all of that, I think that this might be my favorite cover in the Bridgerton verse, next to Bad Guy. I thought Bad Guy was a really cool cover, too. And then there were some other songs in the
But this
the first
one, just
season.
With the levels that happen emotionally in this episode and knowing the depth of this song, I agree with you. I mean, the song itself is beautiful and amazing to be listening to, but then when you know the context of the episode in which it's played, done.
Yeah, it just takes it. All right, so what I realized, though, Marvin, is that we didn't go by our normal thing here.
No, you looked at me.
Because I looked at you and then you just took it over. So thank you so much for
doing
that.
You're welcome.
Okay, here we go. Let's figure this out. Is this is the right camera. Okay, here we go. This episode was episode 103 of Queen Charlotte, entitled Even Days, which of course is a reference to the days in which the queen and king, they would get themselves a little bit busy.
Oh, can you do the two shot for a second?
Yeah,
I have a
sure.
fun fact about even days.
Okay, hold on one sec.
Friends, if you have little ones in your life, and if you are lucky enough that one was born on an even day and one was born on an odd day, I'm going to make your life easy for you, okay? Whatever day it is, that kid gets to be the chooser, okay? You get to have the choice of, you know, you get to eat your ice cream first or whatever it is. Like, that's how Blake and I solve a lot
of
problems in our lives.
If it's an even day.
If it's an even day, you know, that kid shares what went well for them first at school. That kid gets, we do like gratitude on our school ride. That person goes first. Mm-hmm. When they get old enough that they can both sit shotgun, it's going to be dependent upon even in odd days. Like, it's even in odd days, if you can, even if the kid wasn't even born on even an odd day, if they're both born on even days, just give one of them an odd day. It'll change your life, having even an odd days.
Even odd days is the best.
Yes.
At any rate.
All right, continue.
It was entitled Even Days. It is a reference to that Mary just does not want to be on camera right now. So I will go on camera. There we go. And it is obviously what we talked about. God, Queen Charlotte and King George have agreed to get it on those days in order to do the royal thing, which is make a baby. And the writer, of course, once again, is the show creator of this show, Shonda Rhimes. And the director, as always, for Queen Charlotte is Tom Verica. So that is that. Marvin, your cups of tea. How many cups of tea are you giving this episode?
This is so tough. Part of me wants to give it a 4.9. I think I'm going to. I'm giving it a 4.8 because I know that there needs to be some wiggle room. But you know
Man,
what?
I'm shocked.
Let's do it at 4.9. I'll do a 4.9.
I'm shocked. I thought you'd be 5 on this.
No.
Okay. We'll save it for. Okay.
It's all right. 4.9. All right, there needs some wiggle room.
For me, I'm giving this a 4.79.
Okay.
This is an upgrade over the past two episodes. To be honest, the ending is what brings it to a 4.79. Mm-hmm. If this were anything else, if it weren't for the ending, it'd still be in that 4.4 range for me. Yeah, I'd say 4.4. Maybe a high 4.3. Because there are some tropes.
But it's
in here.
Not.
But whatever. So it is what it is. All right, you're good.
Such
you're bad,
Nancy.
Well, listen.
I know. Okay, we're gonna get into it. Okay, so my GBG.
Your GBG. You're good. You're bad, and you're great.
Okay, so my good, I have two. The dancing, because yes, we got the Alicia Keys. Yes. I like having Mia cover when we're dancing. It just makes me happy. And Violet's dad. I am here for Mr. Bridgerton.
Yes. Well,
oh, wait, not
Mr.
Bridgerton. Mr.
Ledger.
Mr. Ledger. Excuse me. Mr. Ledger. I'm here for him. I love that he's like doing all these little winks and he just sits there. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Mr. Featherington, how he would just be like, yes, dear. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
whatever.
Sure. What, yeah.
And I love that when Parliament is all a mess, they're like, and Lord Ledger, oh my God, he can't get anything done. His wife doesn't shut up. Like, I like that he was the first one to cross the line.
Yeah.
And ask for Lady Danbury's hand, saying, you know, I like you. Let's be friends. Yes. Sure. Yes.
It is a question for you about this.
However, as Lady Ledger would probably not like to hear that. Because if I was a married woman and I heard my husband, Blake, say, I like you. Let's be friends. And then go dance.
Yeah. That would,
I'd be like, listen,
that would not work.
Calm
well.
It down.
That would not work.
You
well.
Don't need to say, let's be friends.
When not friends.
No.
When not buddies.
They just say thank you for this. You got a great place. I'm pumped. This is wonderful. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to say I like you. Let's be friends.
That's
a little crossing over the line. I'm just saying, as lady, if thank God she didn't overhear that. Okay.
Yes.
My bad. Okay. I feel so conflicted about Lord Danbury's death because all of this time I have felt like Agatha Danbury. Like her sex to her has almost been rape-like. Like, what's that? Is it Stockholm syndrome when you're like stuck with somebody and you end up falling in love with them because they're your captor? Like, she obviously does not have a love story. She talks about that in this episode, how fortunate she looks at Violet to be, that really, you know, women's purpose was only for breeding. Mm-hmm. And there is this huge age discrepancy. And I just.
Discrepancy. I got you.
Thank you. So I just feel bad because you can see that Agatha sometimes does talk to her husband, like, oh, hey, we could bounce ideas off of each other, and it just shoots her down. So he's a jerk. She tries every once in a while, but it almost reminds me of like a little kid, like, you know, be seen, not heard.
Yes.
And every time she has sex with him, like, she is immediately in the hot bath, like scrubbing herself, feeling so disgusting, like needing to wash him off of her. So, you know, and we see her in all of these sex scenes, which, thank God we don't have any more.
Yeah.
Thank God. Because that's my ick. That's my 4.8 is these sex scenes with Agatha have just made me feel so uncomfortable for her and the bathing and knowing that this is like really unwanted and to know that like in modern times that wouldn't happen or that maybe she would be able to speak up or that really like in modern times that would be seen as rape and how in those times and in different cultures, like women are just meant for breeding and that is part of what they have to do, whether they want or not. And so it just makes me, that is my bad. Mm-hmm. It's just, I felt bad for her this entire time, whether it was good or bad news. Like here she is being like, yes, we got the ball. He's not going to be upset. Crap. Now he wants to celebrate sex. You know, there's mad sex or celebrate sex. So thank goodness it's gone. But I just felt bad, but I also felt super awkward when she was like, guess what, Coral? He's dead. Cool. Awesome. Let's go pretend stuff. But it is so conflicted. And she says that later to Lady Violet, like, I loathe him. So my bad is just the feeling of loathing. And I'm sad that she had to go through this. And I hate that for her.
Sure.
My great is, okay, here we go. I'm so here for this. All of this, ew, what's up with King George? I don't really care for him that much. Turn my corner.
Yeah.
And I also feel like all of the sex in this episode. Mm-hmm. Remind me a lot of that movie with Heath Ledger and Julia Stiles, 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh, yes.
And I kind of, once again, had there been mixed musicians that they covered songs for, I would have wanted "I Want You to Want Me" to like call back to that that movie.
Sure,
but once I'm happy with the choice that they did.
Yeah, the choice that they made was a good choice. 100%.
But it just, it was bringing me a lot back where I was like, "Where's Heath Ledger?"
Yeah, right. Okay, my good is the line, "You are not a simpering girl. Why do you not understand that you hold our fates in your hands?" And this to me felt like a turning point for mm-hmm. Charlotte. You know, finally someone is there to, I mean, like, listen, there has been no, there's been no shortage of real talk between Charlotte and Lady Danbury.
But this is the first real racial talk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes and no, but irrespective of that, it's just one of those moments where I think it's an awakening moment mm-hmm. for Charlotte, because she is so concerned with George and she is so concerned with what is he doing? Why is he gardening? Why is he doing all this stuff? And and it takes Lady Danbury to say, no, you just have to recognize that there are, yes, it's okay to be concerned about this, but there are more things than that.
Yes.
And you literally will change the course of history if you do what you're supposed to do.
And how incredible that Violet has that sight, because she has never been distracted that we can see by love or lust.
Yeah.
You know, so she's always had a clearer focus. And she seems to be a bit older, in my opinion, than Charlotte in this series.
Agatha, you mean.
Sorry. Agatha. So, no, I love that. And also, you hold the fate in your hands. And, of course, we get to that shot of Charlotte holding her womb, knowing that she is now pregnant. Or at least that's what I learned.
Well, that's the universal sign for television, that a woman is pregnant.
And so now she does have the fate in her hands. And so I thought it was really poignant that Agatha says, like, you know, pretty much without saying brown race, without saying that, completely alluding to it. And I like that Charlotte's now able to say, like, okay, my baby is going to be brown.
Right.
In this world that I'm now learning is not open to that.
Right.
So not only do I need to take care of my people, but I'm now a mother to all these people.
Yeah.
And I'm now a mother.
Right.
And I loved it.
And then going from that point to then eventually after the party where George then validates all of this and says, we did more to change England in 1 hour than anything that else has been ever done in the history of this country. It's a phenomenal journey for Queen Charlotte in this episode on multiple levels. And we'll get into the other levels in a minute. My bad is similar to yours, Mary. I found the whole death scene with Lord Danbury to be very off-putting.
I mean, he went out the way he would have wanted to. Let's be real.
Sure. And listen, I get it.
Gross.
I get what they're trying to do. I get what Shonda is trying to accomplish in this scene. Mm-hmm. I understand that it is almost a freeing moment for Agatha in this moment. It is the moment where she can take her own agency into her own hands and make the life that she wants to do without the shackles of Lord Danbury and being constantly put down. And if that were the case and they stayed consistent in that, then I would be okay with it. Like her celebrating his death, like giggling and being like, we're free, blah, blah, blah. Like I would understand.
Okay.
However, there were even moments in this episode where Agatha turns to Lord Danbury and says, like, no, you're just as good as they are. Like, she props him up. And she does it multiple times.
But don't you think that that's the Stockholm Syndrome that I was talking about?
Maybe,
and, like, she's so much younger than him. It made me think of a child and a father. It made me think of you.
Fair enough. Even if it is Stockholm Syndrome, I still, if that is the case, you have to accept the truth of that syndrome, which is there has to be some sort of sadness. There has to be some sort of, there has to be a moment of realization that this person is dead.
Okay, can I challenge
you? And then even her overcoming that and then doing the whole, "Wee, he's dead" thing. Okay. Like, I found it very tonally imbalanced.
Or can Lady Danbury be the most Slytherin of our team here? Because no joke, I saw myself as Lady Danbury in these moments because there is someone that I loathe. And I'm working on it, doing a lot of self-work. May or may not. But like, I know how to play that game with that person. And I would
ask. This person ain't me, right?
No.
Good.
No.
Good.
It's the only person that I really have ever loathed. And I talk about like celebrating when he will die.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
And I knew how to play the game.
Yes.
And placate him. Because here's the thing. As Lord Danbury goes up in society and keeps trying to go to White's and keeps trying to go on the hunt and keeps trying to further, that helps Lady Danbury.
Sure.
So by her saying, like, and sometimes he's the only person she really gets to talk to. She doesn't get to be like, "Oh, Coral, isn't it so nice that we're now equals in society?" Because you're not. So right. The only equal she has in society that she really gets to share this with is Lord Danbury. And every once in a while, it's almost like I can either write my journal or just say it to the person next to me. Mm-hmm. I've had to talk to this person multiple times in my life that I loathed. And like, you can't just always sit there in silence. So sometimes you do have to celebrate right. The things that you have in common, even if they do ignore you. And so I think that actually she is just a very cunning. She is like, very cunning. I'm giving little, like, I saw this episode as like, ooh, if I had any doubt what Hogwarts house Lady Danbury would be in, it would be Slytherin.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Talk about a goal-oriented woman.
Totally agree. I agree with you on all fronts, Mary.
As friends who are worried about my heart and soul, don't worry. I'm working through my loathing. But I saw this and I was like, I get it.
I would agree with you on all fronts, Mary. But I still find it hard to accept the tonality of the scene. And of course, again, I have to go back to your point. The better that Lord Danbury does, yes, the harsh reality is the better that he does, the better she does, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that's a fact. So when she goes to Princess Augusta and she says, "Hey, listen, I want to make sure that my husband can go to White's and do all this stuff." Yes, that makes sense to me. But she still speaks to him in a way that at least alludes to me that there is, like, what I know who you're talking about for your case.
Yeah.
And there was no sort of affection in those conversations. It was one that was like expedient, not affectionate. And my sense from the conversations that Lady Danbury had with Lord Danbury, there was some sort of affection there. Like, when she goes to him and says, "No, you're just as good as they are." Like, don't you
think that that's
stop
her saying it to herself? I think that's her saying it to her family as a whole. Like, obviously, we don't see her as a mother that much. You know what I mean? Even though we know she's had kids. But I think that that's her almost just saying it out loud to herself. Like, Lord Danbury is the little devil on her shoulder.
Yeah, fair.
"Oh, you know, they're never going to see us." No, they will. And we are just as good.
Yep. And let me say this right off the jump.
Like, what a girlfriend has some great positive self-talk.
This guy was not great. I seriously.
Glad
I mean,
he's dead.
Not great, Bob.
And I'm glad he's dead, too, because the way that he treated her.
Because now I've just told everybody I loathe someone. They're like, "Oh, my God."
Well, I think you'll be glad he'll be dead when he's dead, too. So
I know. That's what I'm saying.
So I'm saying.
I'm trying to work on that.
You know what? I think you shouldn't even bother working on it, to be honest.
It's not healthy.
Yeah, but out of sight, out of mind.
That's what she says at this episode. That's what she says to Violet.
Well, the difference between her relationship that she loathes this person, there's a significant
difference. I'm not raped by this person.
Correct. Yes. In fact, this person's now out of your life completely. Yes. So, like, for you to sit back and reflect and say, "I loathe this person that was once in your life, that was once a very large part of your life." And for those of you who are avid listeners of Mary and Blake, I think you can probably suss out who this is. Yeah, the relationship difference there is significant. So I don't think it's apples to apples.
Yeah.
I think it's okay for
you
to not. So anyway.
Let's be done with my loathing.
right. So it is what it is. I'm glad the guy's dead. I'm glad that she did celebrate, to be honest. I'm glad that she did all that. It just felt like a very tonal imbalance going from one extreme to the other without there being some sort of transition. Now, some of you can argue with me that, well, there was a little bit of a transition when she gets up and she looks over the bed, she sees him, and she has a moment there where it's like a pause.
I mean, you're looking at a dead person.
Yes. I didn't see sadness in any capacity.
Does every person when they die fart and pee themselves? Everybody?
I think that, I'm sure that it happens. I don't know.
Because that would make me make a weird face too.
That's true.
No, but just in general, it's probably the first dead person that she's seen.
Here's what I'll say. I don't know enough to say that. That is 100% accurate at all times. I will say that.
I mean, maybe you just don't have any toots left in you.
Maybe you're tooted out.
Yeah.
All right, my great. Listen, it's the end. The end is perfect. And I am fully bought in. Fully. 100% bought in. Because it's real vulnerability from both people, right? Like, we can talk about structure all we want. We can talk about the writing quality all we want. We can talk about, you know, the great experiment and how Shonda is making Charlotte start in one place, travel through another, and then end in the same place each episode. Those are all valid conversations. None of it, however, means anything unless there's a relationship to be shared.
Because everything means nothing.
I think this show exists for this moment right here. Mm-hmm. Right here. This is it. And you can tell me that there's more things to come. Maybe there's better scenes to come. But this is it. This is the catalyst. And when she recognizes all of the things that have been happening and she can get to him because of Pharma George and then recognize that she can be Venus for him. It's a stunning moment. It left me sobbing. I was crying for a good 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Mary's like, "Are you all right?" at the end of the episode. I'm like,
I'm gonna go brush my teeth while you get emotional.
Yeah, like get yourself together.
No, I let you have your moment.
You did. You absolutely did. And you know what it is? It's because I think. So that's my grade. Okay, but so let's get into the conversation because there are a couple of things that I want to ask of you concerning this scene.
Okay.
And for me, I want to begin with this. I think all of us have that moment in our relationships, you know, whether it is you who are the person saying, "I'm Venus," or it's you who are the person that needs your partner to say, "I am Venus." Like,
"I'm your fire at your desire."
Yeah, right. I love that Shonda has built to this moment. She's laid the groundwork for this moment. And it is, in my opinion, regardless of if you or your partner have mental illness in any capacity, it is a relatable moment because throughout all of this, we have ties to Venus. We have ties to we're a team. We have ties to Farmer George. We have ties to Charlotte opening herself up, finding vulnerability in George that nobody else can see. It's a beautiful, striking moment, one that when I think back on this show, I will go right to this scene. And you know when you're watching something great because you forget that you're watching a show. You forget that you're watching characters and actors and something that has been directed and written and composed and meticulously poured over, and I forgot that I was watching a show at this moment, and all I could do was just experience that emotion. Having it at night and like naked and screaming, and the kid who's playing King George is phenomenal. I gotta give him a lot of credit. But my question to you, Mary, because I've been speaking a little while here, is should this moment have come sooner? Because when you look at it, we are halfway through the series now.
Ooh, okay. You ready for this?
Yes.
I think it came at the right point.
Okay.
Because this show is titled what?
Queen Charlotte.
And so we needed to feel it from her perspective. If Like, we needed to feel the confusion and the being alone and the frustration. I have been frustrated with George for 2 full episodes. Heck, 2.5 full episodes. I have been sitting here saying, I don't really know if I love this guy. I don't know if I love their love story. Yes. I don't know if I, like, dig all of this. I'm here because Charlotte's fun and she's sassy and I love the outfits and I love all this kind of stuff. But I don't know if I'm here for George. I needed to feel that with her, just like I needed to feel the monotony of eating dinner alone.
Yes. Okay.
If this was, you know, the royal family of whatever years or King George, it would have been completely different.
Yeah.
Or royal love, you know, whatever they would have titled it had it not been Queen Charlotte. But I think we needed to be in Queen Charlotte's gorgeous shoes, which are changed multiple times a day, to feel that with her, to question, you know, to sit there and to be like, okay, he's hot. Like, they have all this sex and I'm here for it. But then he's kind of a jerk in the next 5 minutes. What is going on? We needed to have that complexity. That yeah. She is in this episode questioning. I kind of dig him, but I kind of don't. I don't know what's going on. We needed to be with Queen Charlotte.
Yeah.
You can disagree, but that's
it's not. It's not that I disagree.
I went on this ride with her, and I'm here for it.
I'm thinking about it as you're saying it, and actually, I see the reasoning. Like, I see what.
But I could see if people wanted to stop after 2 episodes, I could see that because it isn't the traditional Bridgerton love story and the frustrations that they may have with George as well. But
yeah,
once again, it's titled Queen Charlotte for a reason.
And I would also tell you that if you're not bought into the show by now, then I don't think you're going to buy in.
Hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're, in my estimation, you're able to buy in not because this is the changing moment for Charlotte and King George.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this isn't the thing that changes them. That already happened. Like, this elevates it. And this, I think, the Venus scene gets you to buy in as a viewer. But the relationship changes, or the beginning of the change starts with her saying, our walls are too high. Right? That Venus scene has much more impact because of the walls are too high scene. Would you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
The one that you played.
Yeah, I think so too, because it's at that point they had already said, you know, like they had recognized where they had got that they had fault. They recognized that they are a team, that they have to do these things. Like, they're together no matter what. There are no more even odd days. We are going to do this together. And that relationship is solidified without the crux of a mental illness. It mm-hmm. just, they both choose to move forward together.
As a team. Mm-hmm.
And then she's able to do the things that she's able to do because of that choice.
Agreed.
Which is why I say the Venus scene works very specifically because of the walls are too high scene.
Love it.
Yeah. And like in anything, Mary, you know, any drama, any source of film or television, I mean, it is specifically dependent upon relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the change of relationships. And relationships are dependent upon vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
right? If you don't have vulnerability, if you don't have something that each character can relate to each other and each viewer can relate to those characters, you're not going to have an effective drama.
Yeah.
That just, it is what it is. And I think we see vulnerability from the king and the queen, but we also see it, I think, from Agatha.
Yeah.
Eventually in how she relates to
Elder Agatha.
Yeah. Elder Agatha and how she relates to Violet mm-hmm. and Violet.
Unfortunate.
Bridgerton. Right.
This episode.
Well, the funny thing is, Mary, I feel like I'm talking, so I don't want to keep talking. So you got to talk for me here a little bit. Because the ending, it's excited me.
It has excited you. And understandably, I think, you know, I think right now I just want to like check off some boxes and make sure that we touch upon different things. I want to spend a little time with young Violet Ledger. Grows up to be Violet Bridgerton.
Yes.
We, of course, spend way too much time with her racist, like idiotic mom, who I can't stand, Lady Ledger, who is, you know, one of the
just
queen's
a straight
women,
up racist.
Just, yes, is absolutely the worst. And then the father Dearest, who, you know, thinks that Violet is the sun and moon.
Are you getting a little bit of sexual tension between Lord Ledger and Lady Danbury?
I already told you I felt uncomfortable with what he said.
I know, but just even beyond that, like not just what he said, but like
from her. I don't think
there's going to be something going on between the two by the end of all of this.
That would be weird.
I know. That's why I'm asking.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That'd be weird.
Yeah.
All right. And so all of the conversations, I love young Violet. She is so much more feisty than I pictured Violet to be. And I love that she's brainy and she's so smart.
Reminds me of our daughter.
And right now I'm I need the next spinoff to be the Violet Becomes Violet Bridgerton. I need her love story. I need this brilliant woman who wants advanced mathematics. I want her meeting her love. I want the birthday hats, because I'm here to say, I think that the most fairy tale love story out of all of them will be Violet Bridgerton's.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like to
you
me,
just see
it's
it right
just,
off the jump.
You know, because everyone else has all these complexities, and it's not to say that it's the best, because obviously the Queen Charlotte and George one is so complex, and dare I say, almost real aspects to it because of its difficulties. But I just feel like, oh my god, like everyone wants, you know, the Violet Bridgerton love story. So I really hope, I'm crossing my fingers, because if that continues to have these flashbacks with the elder versions of the characters, to, you know, coming back and forth, I mean, that woman just is like such a believer in love. Like, her up to be the CEO of Disney next, because she is just here for all the fairy tale things, and also loves being a mother.
Yeah.
So I find it very interesting that she really wasn't cared for in this beautiful way by her own mother. Mm-hmm. And yet that is something that she longed to be. She ends up having, you know, the 8 children herself. She passes on, especially to Daphne, how wonderful motherhood is. And I think it's so interesting because we don't see that aspect from Charlotte or from Lady Danbury. We see Charlotte, you know, hold her womb in her hand. But then as her older daughter, she's just kind of annoyed. Like, why haven't they married? And Brimsley has to say, it's because they feel bad for you.
Yeah.
And they love you. But I don't really see Lady Danbury or Queen Charlotte being like, I can't wait to be a mom. Like, it's not like Queen Charlotte's like, let's have sex every night because I can't wait to be a mom. No, she says, I have to make an heir. It's like kind of a job.
It's a duty.
Whereas with Violet, the way that she loves motherhood in her older years and just embraces it, it interests me because she did not have that kind of a caring mother.
Right.
But she had that from her dad, it seems.
Yeah, certainly. And it looks like she wants to impress that upon her children.
Yeah.
And even though it might be a little pie in the sky, there is room for love, and there is room for family and fulfilling the things that you don't have.
And it's interesting because, you know, Violet talks about tradition and in these family things that you get to do, and we talk now about the birthday hats, and Queen Charlotte does have that where she brings the Christmas trees in.
Yes.
And that is another fun fact, that actually Queen Charlotte did bring Christmas trees to England and made it a tradition. And
yes,
Brimsley says all of England is blessed for you bringing this beautiful tradition to our holiday. And also she did she was an early person who helped find and bring Mozart to the public eye,
which is crazy. I love how they touched upon that in this,
because it's real. It's based in truth. Yeah, yeah.
That I love how they did that. And but Mary, I want to go back to Violet and her talking about the birthday hat scenario.
Okay.
With her husband, with Edmund. I agree with you. It's that little bit of writing that makes me want to see her story.
Yeah.
Again, because it goes back to vulnerability, right?
Because I feel like there's must have been like this building over time, you know, like a beautiful, because to me, the way she speaks about him, it wasn't forced. It wasn't, well, eventually I'll fall in love with him. It was just this like magical once in a lifetime love.
But part of me also wants to keep that magical love between Violet and Edmund kind of mysterious. Like, I don't know, because
does he go off to war? Is he like a soldier? And like, oh, maybe he's dead and he comes back. Like, give me a love story like that. Oh,
I think there's an interesting narrative where they could keep going back to almost.
Will they be like in The Notebook because she's so headstrong?
You're a pain in the ass.
How would young Bridgerton say that?
I don't know.
You're a pain in my backside, which is unladylike.
You provide difficulty in my rear.
Make haste.
Part of me wants, just because he died young, you know, Violet has to look at him as a memory. So part of me wants to keep him as a memory as opposed to living.
Okay.
Right. Because, yes, we had the flashbacks in season two of Bridgerton. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an interesting narrative device. Mm-hmm. But I almost get like sort of Luke Skywalker vibes from him in a sense that like he's a myth.
Okay.
And nobody is going to be able to live up to that.
Wow.
If you know what I mean.
No, I do, Jellybean. It's going to be interesting. Yeah.
You know, and by the way, I say Luke Skywalker, not in like A New Hope or whatever, but like in The Last Jedi or in The Force Awakens, where it's like, oh my God, like I know I've used this example a lot in Merry and Blake Media, but like, oh my God, you knew Luke Skywalker? Mm-hmm. Like, I thought he was a myth. Like, yeah. I thought he was like a thing, like, you know, just like a story. Mm-hmm. And Edmund feels very much like that to me. And it's so very personal to Violet's kids and, you know, especially obviously Anthony and Violet herself. And I kind of enjoy her reliving the hat moment.
I just feel like by the rate that they're going, they would do no wrong. And I appreciate that you would want it to stay like this myth. But after seeing even just these three episodes of Queen Charlotte, I would trust them to make me be a puddle of mush, you know?
Yes.
Like, I'm talking like Outlander wedding night mush of sensuality.
Fair enough.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Can I touch upon Lady Danbury?
Yeah, of course.
So as I said, I think I'm actually going to go and like create a little thing about which houses I think all these people would be in Hogwarts, because for her to be planning a ball, asking the princess, the Dowager Princess, Princess saying, I don't think so.
Yeah, and she just does it anyway.
Yeah, and she just says, nope, we're going to do this, and we're going to do it before they could tell me yes or no. This is going to be amazing. What an intelligent and brave but bold, cunning woman. I mean, she goes and has all this stuff printed. Mm-hmm. It blows my mind.
On kind of a prayer. Like, hopefully this is all going to work out. And it really works out because of her relationship and what she ends up saying to Queen Charlotte. You know, the whole, you're going to change this. You're not a simpering girl.
Yeah.
Come on, let's go. Let's figure this out. And luckily, Charlotte has the wherewithal and the self-awareness to say, oh my God, yeah, you're right.
Mm.
You know, like, and I think they're... I think Shonda is certainly fleshing out these characters in a way that they deserve.
Yes.
Agreed. Absolutely.
Agreed.
They pass the test of like, can you tell me about Agatha and Charlotte beyond what they look like, what they do, you know, or an action that they've performed?
Let's talk about some actions that were performed in this episode.
I got to tell you.
Angry sex.
Well, first I want to say I'm glad I'm done with the sex scenes with Lord and Lady Danbury.
We have moved on from their sex to good sex.
I'm just saying I'm glad I'm done with it because it got old very quick.
Yes.
Got old very quick.
Ting. The sex montage of Charlotte and George reminded me of the eating by herself montage.
Ooh, just good
boom,
one.
Boom.
Yes.
Different places, different outfits, different things, but like still monotone voices.
And even doing it when they're eating.
Yes. Oh my God. I loved
plates.
Brimsley being like, get out of here. Holy smokes. Like they don't even care. And it makes me almost think that these royals just see the people who work for them as accessories, as wall dressings, because they are always there. They just get so used to them.
Interesting.
Like, do you really want to be seeing our bits? But whatever. I mean, they probably do see
their
bits all the time.
I mean,
exactly.
Yeah. They're changing and doing the whole thing.
And like, whatever, they'll be happy to know we are trying to make the air, like, go and tell my mom all the time.
Yeah,
like, yes,
right.
They're doing it all over the place, but they are having crazy sex. Crazy sex.
And it's interesting because, you know, obviously they come out as king and queen, they greet the crowd, and and it's very lovey-dovey, and oh my goodness, it's the king and queen, and we, and then all of a sudden, they shut the door.
Drop their hands.
And see you later. Yep. Gone.
Except, oh shoot, we have to go have sex.
But I don't even think it's, oh shoot, when they have to go have sex. I think it begins that way. It's like, all right, even day.
Yeah.
Like,
but then they're so into it. They're like passionate and like cheeks touching and like embracing each other.
Yes,
and I'm
that's
like,
the thing.
This is so conflicted. They both dig each other so much and they both love having sex.
Right. And they can connect.
I mean, hello, they have 15 babies.
True. They can connect with each other on an intimate level. It almost reminds me of Claire and Frank. In
what
Outlander.
Claire says is
yeah,
that
she's
this
like,
is how
no matter what, we always could go back to being physical. That's how
Ooh,
we connected.
Yes.
Like that's how we got back to each other.
Yes.
And I think it's Charlotte's recognition and even George's recognition that there is something there. It's just a question of finding the roadmap to get to it. Mm-hmm. The easy button, of course, is go bang.
Yeah.
Right? But the roadmap there is what... And again, this pays off the whole I'm your Venus thing. Like, that's the roadmap.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the North Star to their relationship, mm-hmm. which I think will eventually fuel the tension between the two for the rest of the season.
Well, and I think that like when Charlotte gets to see this Farmer George aspect and who he really is out in the fields, and he does have these dirty hands, that it humanizes him, because her one job right now is to make a baby. Mm-hmm. Granted, she really enjoys that process, but George kind of treats her poorly and she's mad at him because of that thing that she overheard with the Princess Dowager, you know, it is my job to, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then when she says it to him in a different tone, actually understanding what those words mean, you know, the that we play in the beginning of this episode, she just unlocks it, because now she too is entwined in that. They are part of a team. Like, she is here with him for the happiness and the misery of the country. And this is her job, is to help create this heir, but she also wants to be there to support him. And she realizes that heavy weighs the crown, for real.
Yes.
Honestly, though, I gotta say, once again, having Coronation Day in a show air on the same weekend as King Charles's Coronation Day. Love the timing. I mean, seeing the crown, seeing the robes, seeing everybody,
yeah.
You know, where's the girl in the teal holding a sword? Come on, where's the sword person?
I want the sword lady, damn it.
I want a sword. But I loved seeing them hold these same like scepters and stuff that we then also got to see Charles and Camilla have.
Right.
And I just thought it was a really neat thing. Obviously, Netflix knows what they're doing when it comes to the timing.
Oh,
they're
sure.
Like, oh, you want a royal coronation?
We'll give you one.
Because that one was kind of boring.
Kind of boring. Oh, my God. Would rather watch freaking my carpets grow.
I mean, we watched it. We loved it. But as Blake and I and our friend Julie had said, we wish that there was like pop-up videos where it's like, this sword is this old. This person's this person. Here's someone sleeping. Like, I would have loved a little like American juicy.
Oh, sure.
Sticky
our friend Julie
stuff.
Said it was like, they should make this like pop-up videos like on VH1 for all of you olds out there
like us
you remember pop-up video from VH1. Mm-hmm. Part of that coronation process, Mary, is Brimsley and Reynolds, by the way. Reynolds' hair, dude, that guy's hair, we are talking about all the moose. Every bit of moose that was ever created is going into Reynolds' hair.
And like a round blow dryer action.
Oh,
care for it.
Yes.
And all the running he needs to do when he's running after the king or clearing people out of the rules. You know, there's a lot of product and I'm here for it. The bump it.
Oh, the bump it. His bump it is the extended version.
Yes. Jersey Shore, watch
that
out.
That was for nothing on Reynolds. That was for some rare Jersey girls right there. That Reynolds bump it is like the elite of all bump its. Are we finding the time? Is the relationship between the two of them is in like how they interacted.
Who are we talking about?
Reynolds and Brimsley.
Uh-huh.
Is that the right fit for this episode?
The touch hands?
The touch hands and the whole thing. Like,
are you getting another rider? That bit?
Yeah, like that whole interaction.
I'm okay with it because we've been with them having sex and had all this stuff that it would be weird if we didn't acknowledge their relationship at all. I did like Brimsley being nervous because obviously they're not an out together couple. They can't be. So of course he has to be like, you're acting really strange. Now granted, Reynolds is guarding the king downstairs in the cellar who's being examined. So Brimsley knows something's up. Like, we can't sit down and be like, all right, we're boyfriends. like, let's 100% tell each other the truth. There is some difficulty in this relationship. And then even showing that they can't hold hands. I love how the queen and king can have sex in front of a dozen people.
Yeah.
And not blink an eye. And these guys can't even hold hands. I just thought it was a really neat dichotomy to show of how different things are.
And it's somewhat reflective of season one of Bridgerton with Simon and Daphne. Like it calls back to it.
Yes.
It alludes to it. It's not in your face.
Yep.
But you gotta,
when they're looking at the painting, they got the hands. Ooh, nice.
Yes, yes.
I dig it.
Somewhat reflects it. I don't know if there's enough space for this relationship.
I don't think there needs to be space. I think it needed to tide us over so the only sex we were seeing wasn't just the Danbarrys.
Gotcha.
I don't think that it's going to be like, ooh, Brimsley and Reynolds, because Reynolds isn't in the future.
Oh, I like that point, Mary.
Like, we needed something to satiate us and get us through the, yes, there's darkness and there's not a lot of love, but there's love somewhere. You just may not see it.
You brought up a couple of good points. One is the only kind of relationship outside of George and Charlotte that we were getting is the Danbarrys.
Yeah.
And that is not a healthy relationship. So to show that there are people who are in love and or maybe not in love, but are just are enjoying each other's company and are interested in each other in a way that is, you know, pleasing.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. It does fill the gap there. And I think that's an important thing to note, right? Because if you don't have that balancing act, the balancing act that, you know, Queen Charlotte and King George are up until this point have been very rocky and just unsure of each other. Then we have the other scope. The other side of this is the Danbarrys. And in between we have Reynolds and Brimsley.
I personally don't think that we're going to be having too much more sex with Reynolds and Brimsley.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be interesting to see the demographics of who the niche viewer is of Bridgerton, because the past two seasons have been heterosexual couples.
The main characters.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, there has been with Benedict some, like, you know.
Yes, there was some dabbling.
Dabbling, yes. But the niche viewers of the Bridgerton series, for the most part, have been watching heterosexual relationships and intercourse.
Yeah.
And so I don't see this taking a far right and being like, now we're going to be showing a lot of queer couples as frequently as the heterosexual couples in bed. I think that this was another example of diversity in this season that kind of makes it once again really different from Bridgerton. Mm-hmm. That yes, we're going to be showing more racial diversity and equality, but also giving a bit more equality sex time wise to queer couples. And so I don't think that this is going to be like ongoing. And as I said, we know Reynolds isn't in the future.
Well, that was going to be my next thing, Mary.
He may be, we don't see the king, but we don't see Reynolds and Brimsley older versions hanging out that much. So once again, I think this is like another tragic thing that is just going to peter off, whether it's because in this season we see it but I'm just saying, now that we're having like loads of Charlotte and George sex, I think that's how this is going to continue.
Yeah. You can see the transition, right? From how they maneuver themselves in and out. Like, you know, yeah, you're right. Okay.
And also, I think that just sex in general is going to get a little bit of a backseat now that the mental illness aspect has been opened up. That, we needed to like shove so much sex. Like, you needed to have Thanksgiving dinner worthy sex, like multiple courses, multiple things, appetizers, a couple of desserts. You know what?
Without the tryptophan.
Here's your like midnight extra snack, even. Yes. Okay. Like, pump it full of luscious sex in this episode, and then open the door for mental illness and the difficulties and the layers that's going to be in this relationship. And I think we're really going to have a lot of time on that.
Yeah. And the next thing I wanted to say, Mary, is you brought it up again, which is Reynolds is not there, you know, later on. And it's probably an affectation.
We would recognize the bump it.
Oh, yeah. It's probably an affectation of the fact that, you know, he probably didn't exist as a character in the first two seasons of Bridgerton, right? So I wonder how they're going to explain that away. Whether it's, well, you don't see the king a whole lot, so you're not going to see Reynolds. Mm-hmm. Or does something happen between the two where, like,
well, in general,
does their relationship get out? Right. And yeah. does, and
I doubt it.
I mean, I would doubt it too, but
maybe that'll be another spinoff, the Brimsley.
Right. But like, that would be an interesting thing. Like, yeah. Right. Like, does, oh, I love this
idea. Is this a scribbling prediction?
Yes.
There's, do you need a sound effect?
Yes, I do. I do. I do. Absolutely. Here it is. Okay. There has to come a point when Brimsley has to choose the queen uh-huh. or Reynolds.
Okay.
And he chooses the queen. The only reason I can legitimize...
I think he already did in this episode, though.
No.
Because Brimsley's putting up his pants and he's like, come on, man, you said something about the doctor looking in his eye in the basement. Not fair.
No. That's not it.
Okay.
There has to come a point where something happens and he actually has to make a choice. And I can legitimize this entire relationship within this show if that choice happens, right? Or vice versa, right? Like Reynolds has to choose between the king and Brimsley, like mm-hmm. one or the other. It would be more fitting if Brimsley is the one who has to choose, right? Because we eventually see Brimsley later on with the queen, and then you understand like their relationship and why he's still there, and it recontextualizes the whole relationship. To me, that the experience we're sharing between the two of them is justified if a choice has to be made, because Brimsley wants this relationship to continue with Reynolds. And obviously he tries to apologize and he does the whole thing. And eventually Reynolds comes back and says, whatever. But I think that something has to happen.
Sorrows, prayers. Something bad will happen.
And that
whether
choice,
we see it or not.
Yeah, that choice is what's important. Again, choice. It's not all great. It's not all bad. It's just good things and bad things all at the same time. And you just hope that you've made the choice that there's more good than bad.
Yeah.
And I hope. I hope that's what happens in this season.
Why is the doctor looking in the king's eye?
That's a great question.
What could be going on in an eye?
I am not a neurologist, and I also suspect that this guy is not a neurologist.
Were you sad that the princesses can't marry a hunter that gets lost and wanders on the grounds? Because I am. I am sad for them. Oh, mother, could we marry Hunter? No.
I love this. Yes, I know you are old. Your wombs are likely dry and useless.
Goodness gracious.
Oh, man. There's always time for comedic relief.
Seriously.
There's always time for that. But, Mary, there's also this last scene with Brimsley and the queen mm-hmm. in the current timeline when the queen asks him why her daughter's never married. And after some going back and forth, yeah. she's
maybe
like...
Maybe not like you more.
Right. She...
He.
Well, she... She finally asks him, no, really, like, yeah. what is this? And he says, well, you're still his queen, forever frozen, forever waiting. Your daughters could not leave you here, trapped in time. I think, and her response is great. Go over there. Don't look at me. Like, yep. the whole thing. I want more gold on my tree.
Yep.
I want to know your interpretation of that line.
Of which line, my
love? Of the, you're still his queen, you're forever frozen, and your daughters wouldn't leave you to be stuck here in time.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know your interpretation of that, because I don't know how to interpret that, in all honesty.
I took it as, we love our mother. Even though she's just not a very loving mom, aside from her sarcasm. I mean, I don't really love it.
But sorrows.
Yeah. Prayers. I mean, I see the boys kind of give some of it back. So maybe they're just like a sassy family.
Sure.
But I see it as they are afraid to leave her and then have him pass and her be broken and totally alone. So I see it as they want to be there to help just support her. Mm. And honestly, she is alone most of the time because he isn't there with her. And she is just kind of aimless, you know, without her king. And that they do get to keep her company. So, yeah, that's how I took it. That they want to be there to protect her and to give her somebody.
Yeah,
someone to love.
And nerds, I would love to know what you think of this scene, because I think that this scene is so, and pardon the word, but like so pregnant of meaning and intentionality from Brimsley. And it feels like he's trying to say something what you're saying, Mary. But he says also that you are his queen. Like, and frozen in time. Like, what?
But so are the girls now frozen in time because he hasn't passed on. Like, there is no crowned heir, you know? So she is still the queen. They still are her daughters. They still are the princesses. Like, everything is still frozen. He hasn't been able to die and, you know, have the throne be passed on to somebody else, and they kind of grow up.
Yeah. So what do you interpret then, forever frozen, forever waiting? Like, what, again, I think that is just so full of authorship.
What do you think?
I don't know. And that's why I'm struggling with it. And I know you, the listener.
I just think it is just that. It's Groundhog Day every day.
Ah, okay.
You know, that he hasn't come back. Because from what it feels to me is that, like, maybe they were young enough, but still old enough to remember a bit when he was a bit more sane, and they remember their daddy, and they too are waiting for him to come back. So whether he's going to come back mentally and, like, live happily ever after as this beautiful family, or if he's going to pass and then there is a change. But I feel like, you know, we see the monotony of the queen. Is he dead? Is he dead? Is he dead? Whenever somebody shows on up, like, she is continually in this state of, like, concern, and it just... I think the kids kind of feed off of that. It's almost like their mom is dealing with her own mental issues. You know, I don't want to say illness in any way, but like it makes me think of parents whose child is on life support or is in the NICU and just this constant like state of worry where they can't really see outside their bubble because they have to be so focused on their loved one that needs and deserves their attention or, you know, there's also just this feeling that like when one of your family members is in need, that the whole family, particularly the women who, you know, as we see, the guys are out like having sex with actresses and married women, but it seems like the women want to still be there and have that sisterhood and kind of like hang out close together because you don't know if it's going to happen at any moment. I don't know.
You got anything else for this episode, my love?
The last thing is that I just think that they're opening up this door for conversations about older relationships, relationships with people who are older. Whether do you find new love? Do you wait? Like a lot of people, you know, their partners go through things, whether it's Alzheimer's or long-term bouts of illness like cancer, and like sticking by them and how that really changes your dynamic and how it changes your relationship dynamic that you may think of romantically. You know, people who never really got to have a great love. I just think it's interesting to be seeing these elder women and their relationships and how they either reflect on them or how they're in it. It's once again a different element than we've had than Bridgerton. Bridgerton has just been the young courtship love.
Sure.
And it hasn't been about the nitty-gritties of marriage and the nitty-gritties that you lose people or that you lose people mentally, but they're still physically here.
Yeah.
And you're caring for a loved one. I just think it's a really interesting conversation, or it's just interesting to make people think and feel about that. And you go to sleep and you're like, wow, this is so complex.
That's kind of why I think I go back to Queen Charlotte being almost the anti-Bridgerton.
Yeah.
Right? Because there are a number of layers here. And
it's the grown-up Bridgerton.
You know, it's not quite Succession layered, right? Where you're just watching bad people do terrible things, but you still feel connected to them. But, I mean, it is in comparison to Bridgerton, right? And
I just think it's so much more complex and it's grown up, you know? Like, young love, you just think, like, happily ever after, right. Yay, or you broke my heart, I'm going to cry. But, like, there's seasons of life that are luscious and full of love, and we mourn them like how Lady Bridgerton mourns them.
Sure.
And then there's seasons of life where there is illness in your world, and it puts everything on pause.
Yeah, right.
There's seasons of life where you loathe people, and you hate yourself for loathing.
Yeah.
I just think it's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And that you can, like, want things that other people don't want. You know, we look at Lady Danbury, who has no conversations really about her kids, you know, whereas Violet, completely different.
Sure.
So I just think it's interesting.
Yeah, I am looking forward to revisiting Bridgerton and watching the Queen Charlotte scenes with more context now. Yeah. And I don't want to go to that place where it's easy to go and say, like, oh, Queen Charlotte's better than Bridgerton or vice versa. Like, I think it's very easy to have that conversation. I think it's a low-hanging fruit in that kind of conversation.
Well, it's just a different show in general.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I was about to say. Like, it's just, it's very purposely not the same show.
Yeah. It's purposely called Queen Charlotte.
Yeah, but I mean, they could have made a Queen Charlotte show and made it feel like Bridgerton. Like, it could have happened.
Yeah.
And there is Bridgerton DNA in there.
Oh, yes.
You know, it feels very much like Alien and Prometheus, those two films.
Okay.
Where...
My cat is driving me crazy.
Our cat just moved and made the microphone hit Mary's face. That was funny. You know, there was alien DNA in Prometheus, but Prometheus was a very different film than Alien. And that's what I'm getting from Queen Charlotte and Bridgerton. Anyway, the last thing I want to talk about for this episode is Queen Charlotte is in this kind of rare place where it's addressing the race issue without addressing it head on.
That's what I totally agree. And I love it.
And yeah, I just wanted to get your interpretation of that. And is that the most effective way to do it?
I think because we have the whole visual aspect, yes. Even in the dancing at the ball, the dancers were doing different dances.
Sure.
Like different moves. Mm-hmm. We have the visual aspect. I don't think we need verbally, oh, the brown people are on the opposite side of the white people. We don't need that.
Right.
We can see. We're grown-ups.
Yep. Visual storytelling, if you will. All right. All right. You got anything else?
No.
All right. I do have one email here from a listener that I want to read. This one comes from Tammy. She says, hey, Mary and Blake, regarding your comments about how it would be known whether or not the wedding had been consummated, it wasn't just a matter of his or her word. Charlotte was a virgin, and for time immemorial, the men that mattered, in quotes, would have had the sheets checked to see if she bled from her giving her way her maidenhead. Mm-hmm. Do you recall the scene in Yentl when the title character spilled a bit of wine on the sheets during their wedding night? Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. That's what she was trying to stage. In some cultures, their sheets were paraded around for all to see.
Oh my God.
Also, it's interesting to me that Lady Danbury had a dim view of sex from her marriage, something to be endured, and even told the queen to watch out for the head-banging part. Since Charlotte obviously enjoyed her experience, I wonder why she didn't tell Lady Danbury that it was much better than she described. Maybe Lady Danbury would then think her experience wasn't typical? Anyway, loving your takes on Bridgerton, this Bridgerton prequel, and looking forward to hearing more. Cheers from Tammy.
So. I think that she didn't want to tell her because she would feel bad. Like, man, she's got bad sex.
Yeah, that's.
I'm going to make her feel even worse.
All right, you ready to close this bad boy out?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We are halfway through the Queen Charlotte series. Don't forget to hit that share button to leave us a written review in Apple Podcasts on the Bridgerton with Mary and Blake podcast feed. Writing a sentence or two means so incredibly much to us. It helps other people who love this series find our podcast. Share it with some friends. Put it in your stories or on your social media feed, or just send them a little text message and say, hey, I know you were talking about Queen Charlotte. Check out this podcast. We truly appreciate it.
And
we just also want to say thank you for our friends at jointhenerdclan.com.
Yes.
You make all of this possible.
And of course, go to maryandblake.com to check out all the great podcasts and blogs that we have going on over there. As well as all of our socials, just look up Mary and Blake. That would be that would also include Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, all the things. Just Mary and Blake. Go to jointhenerdclan.com, as Mary said, to get all the great benefits of what we're doing here, Mary and Blake Media. Because that's my cat is assaulting Mary.
She's like, mom,
Mary.
I'm touched out.
It's coronation day. Let's go. All right. Yeah. So that's that.
My name's Mary.
No more assaulting from the cat. And I'm just Blake.
Now go out there and brew some more tea. Or spill it. You do whatever you want with that tea.
Drink however it works for you.
Sip it.
Put some lemon in it.
A little milk.
A little bit of milk. Are you a sugar and lemon person, or are you a milk person?
My milk and sugar.
It depends on the tea, I think.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
If it's an Earl Grey tea, yeah. I'm just a lemon and sugar guy.
That's good for you.
If it's regular breakfast tea, I love that for you. If it's a regular breakfast tea, I'm all about the milk life.
If it's a herbal tea, I'm honey.
Oh, honey and herbal tea is great.
Yeah.
Or candy cane tea.
Oh, I love candy cane tea from Trader Joe's. We have it all year round, even though you're not supposed to, because I love it so much and I buy so much
of it.
Just
boxes and boxes of candy cane tea in our house.
Oh my gosh. On that note, friends. All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everybody.